Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. I'm Kim Russo. I'm the director of AGLCA. Today, we're continuing our series on the story of my Great Loop, and our guest today will be Jake Krancic. Jake looped solo aboard a sailboat, so a couple of different twists, kind of not your average looper. So we thought he would be a great guest to cover some of the questions people have about those different styles of looping. So we'll bring Jake in just a moment, but first I do want to take a moment to recognize and thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes and Associates, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, and Waterway Guide Media. As always, we encourage our listeners to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. And Jake Krancic, wonderful to see you. Thank you so much for being here to share your story.
Nice to see you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, let's kind of start from the beginning. You know, how did you first learn about the Great Loop, and what made it something that you wanted to tackle?
Well, I didn't learn about it until just before that I wanted to do it. I wanted to go down the Mississippi River. I live in Illinois by Starved Rock in Utica, Illinois, and it's Starved Rock Lock and Dam. And then we own property on the Vermilion River that feeds into the Illinois River. And everybody goes by here, all the loopers. But I didn't know about that. I was just thinking, like, to go down to New Orleans. And a lot of people in our area have done that by canoe or boats or whatever. But the problem is once you get there, how do you get back, and what do you do with the boat when you get there? So I thought about it. When I was thinking of doing it, this was probably in the late 80s, early 90s, trying to make that trip maybe when I retire. And then what do you do with that boat when you get there? It could be a tough time to sell it, everything. And then I started checking into it when I retired, and then I found this thing about the loop, that you can do a loop and go around and come back. I saw that. I thought, that's perfect. Then I can come back here and don't have to worry about selling the boat right away and, you know, problems like that. So that's how it happened.
Well, it certainly extended your trip, I'm sure, quite a bit in New Orleans. But so since New Orleans was initially kind of your intended destination, did you do New Orleans? Did you take the lower Mississippi, or did you take the 10-Tom route that most
I took
take?
The 10-Tom. I thought about making a right when I got out of Mobile Bay there, but the person I was traveling with didn't go as far as they think they were going to go. So I was solo again right there. And then New Orleans, that's what I talked about when I was in the 80s and 90s thinking about it. Our daughter ended up going to Tulane down there. So we made a lot of trips to New Orleans many times.
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, with Southwest Florida kind of changing a lot of people's plans for the winter with the devastation there.
Yeah.
There are a lot of loopers who are turning right this season and coming out of Mobile Bay and heading for New Orleans just as kind of a side trip. They've got, you know, time to kill, so to speak, because there isn't any place for extended dockage
in the
Fort Myers area. So some of them are kind of doing your initial plan there. But, you know, you mentioned, well, I guess I mentioned in the intro that you looped solo.
Yes.
Tell us more about that, because I understand that you are married.
Yes. My wife was kind enough to let me do this trip. She works with people that have dementia, and she has different clients, and she wanted to stay home and take care of them. And she gave her blessing for me to go on the loop. So that's what I did. I got home, I think, two or three times. I came home. Fourth grandchild was born. So I came home for that. I came home for Christmas. And there were some other things in there, but she was good enough to let me go.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the boat, because in addition to kind of being a solo looper, although you did have some crew, and we will talk about that too, but tell us about the boat itself, because it was a sailboat. And at last check, our database tells us that about 9% of loopers have sailboats as opposed to powerboats. I do suspect some of those are not the boat that the member intends to loop on. Because when you're out there looping, as you probably found, it's probably not 9% that are sailboats. So tell us a little bit about your boat and why that became your Great Loop boat.
Well, I never owned a boat. So I wanted to do the loop. I wanted to do it as economically as possible. So I read some of the Skipper Bobs, and everybody went through, and he went through with all different kinds of boats. And I thought, well, that would be the way to do it. And then it's also, it can use it up here for Lake Michigan for sailing. So I thought that would be a good option. And I ended up getting it from Crowley's over there by Chicago, in West Chicago, South Chicago. And it was an O'Day, it was a 77, it was a 32 foot, and it was a center cockpit. Now, center cockpit is like having a trawler with an aft berth back there. So there's two separate berths. I had a head in the back, a sink in the back, and my twin bed in the back. Then there's the cockpit, and then up front, then you had your head up there again, your kitchen, and a V berth and the settee. Everything was up there, so it worked out because the people, when I thought of people coming with me or coming to visit, we'd have separate cabins, and that would be nice. You know, you're not crowded in there. So that's what I went with, and it had a little four-cylinder diesel in it that burned about a third to a quarter of a gallon an hour. So it's almost nothing.
Even
that's
with
what makes it really economical.
Yeah, even with fuel prices where they are today, that would still be an economical choice.
Yes.
Yeah, I have to admit, I'm a bit envious.
Fuel did not become an issue. I was worried about it when we did the Hoppies thing and, you know, going down to Green Turtle Bay, and I was worried there about extra, you know, 5-gallon jerry cans to carry fuel. We went with a 28-gallon tank, I think, was in there, and I never used any of the jerry cans. We got all the way, you know, to Green Turtle Bay, and I think I took about 14 gallons of fuel. That was it.
Wow. And this was, remind us, Jake, when you did the loop.
16 and 17.
Okay.
I left August or September 11th, and I returned on 16, and I returned August 26th, 27th. I can't remember the exact date, in 17.
So was that before the Paducah fuel dock opened?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there wasn't any. But like I say, I was worried, but it wasn't an issue for us.
Yeah. So for those who have, you know, looked at the loop route and have concerns about fuel, when Jake did it, the biggest distance between fuel stops was from Hoppies in Kimmswick, Missouri on the Mississippi to Green Turtle Bay, which is on, you know, the land between the lakes area, Tennessee River, Kentucky Lake.
Barkley.
So 250 miles. With the Paducah dock there, that cuts it to more like 200. So if you have a boat that you are concerned about the range, it's a little bit easier now than when Jake did it. But obviously, Jake, it sounds like you only used about a half a tank even on that stretch.
Yeah,
amazing.
It wasn't. And right after that, it was like fuel just was not a concern anymore,
yes.
You know, which was nice.
Absolutely. So one of the other concerns. So those who are proponents of using a sailboat for the loop, obviously the cost savings is substantial.
Right.
One of the hindrances for some is that mast. You can't do a whole lot of sailing on the rivers in particular.
Right.
And there are some bridges where you have to take it down, and probably other bridges that you need to wait for openings when you might have otherwise been able to kind of slide through. So talk about those logistics and, you know, where you found the mast to be an issue, if at all.
Okay, I carried the mast. I didn't send it. A lot of people send it from Crowley's, and they send it down to Turner's down in Mobile Bay.
Yes.
I didn't do that. I carried it on the deck. I tried to find a place locally where I live, around by Utica or Peoria or somewhere, to have the mast put back up. I couldn't. I couldn't find anybody to do it. Now, I think Heritage Harbor can do it now. I've talked to them, and they might be able to put it up for you. The bridge in Ottawa, it's kind of iffy there, depending on the height of the water, because you're right around 50. I think that's 50 or 55 feet, somewhere in there, which is kind of low for a sailboat. So if the river was up, if putting it up at Heritage Harbor, you have to go underneath that bridge after you leave there, so that wouldn't work. I had mine put up at Green Turtle Bay. I would have had it again put it up earlier at Green Turtle Bay. I made it all the way down to Mobile Bay, no problem. I did have to have some bridges open for me,
right.
But I was only at about 47, 48 feet without the antenna on top.
Okay. So taking it down at Crowley's, as Jake said, so for those of you contemplating a sailboat, the reason for taking it down at Crowley's is that there is the lowest fixed bridge on the Great Loop that has no alternate way around, is on the Illinois waterway at mile marker 300.5 or so. And it's charted at 19.6 feet. So every sailboat's going to need to take the mast down
Yeah, you're going to
to
have
get
to.
through that bridge.
Right.
So interesting that you did put it back up though, because I do get questions about that, and it's kind of challenging to really figure out where you might have trouble if you put it back up. So that's great information that, possibly the
Yeah.
bridge at Ottawa may be tough to clear if the mast was up, but after Green Turtle Bay, it's pretty much smooth
All the way you're
sailing,
good.
so
Yeah.
to speak.
Well, now I've talked to, I almost bought another sailboat that I was going to not really do the loop on, but I was going to go back down to Florida. And that's the Starved Rock Marina there, right before the lock and dam. They can put up a mast there. The problem there is that you're looking at a draft. 4 feet would really be pushing it. They're more like 3.5. The boat I was looking at had 3.5. Well, I was going to put it up there and I'd have the mast bent down the whole way, which you can do. It stabilizes the boat a little bit better. Carrying it on the deck on a sailboat, when I left up in Chicago, and I kept my boat down at Hammond, and I had to go up. I wanted to go downtown Chicago to go through. Well, I couldn't really go there. I had to go way out into the lake because it was so rough. And that boat was rocking, and that mast laying on there. Now it's tied down, but still, it's not really that tied down. You just done some apron there. I was worried I was going to leave it before he lose it before he even started, on that. But we made it through there, and it is that, in rough waters. But on the rivers, there really isn't that much of the rough water. But it stabilizes the boat a little bit having that mast up in your rigging.
But so then you would need to take the mast down again when you are trying to work your way back into the Great Lakes. So somewhere on the New York
Yeah,
canals,
Catskills.
regardless of which direction you go, you're going to need to
Yeah,
clear some low bridges
Catskills, New
again.
York
So where did you
work.
take it down?
Catskills, New York works really good. They're set up for it. They've got a permanent crane there. They've got all the 2x4s to make the A-frames, everything. They're all set up. They got the screws to put it together. It's a nice deal there. And then put it there. I put it down and then I put it back up in Ontario. Up in, I forget the name, Midland,
Midland.
Ontario.
Yeah,
I
and
put
there are
it up.
several
Yeah.
yards probably in Midland that can do that. But so yeah, again, the New York State canals, whether you're going north through Lake Champlain or whether you're kind of heading west into the Erie Canal, you're going to hit some low bridges that you're going to have that down.
Right.
So for the sailors out there who are considering taking their sailboat on the loop, that's the other spot where you've got some low bridges that don't open. So your choice to carry it with you is one that some folks do. Was it in the way? Was it a hat? If you were to do this all again, would you again carry the mast with you, or would you ship it?
I take it with me. I take it with me and put it up as soon as I could, and to make the clearances. One other thing to note is at Hammond, I didn't really know it, but they have a crane there that puts the mast up too. And they don't do the crating up or sending it, down to Turner's, but it is at a fraction of the cost taking the mast down. Usually it's around $300 to $400, might be 125 or 130 at Hammond.
To
Well,
take
it
it
is
down
quite a bit
there.
of a savings to
Well,
do.
and that makes sense too, because of course you can then do the Chicago River, the downtown Chicago route, because you're
Right.
already have the mast down, you've already got that lowered air clearance on your boat. So it's a great idea, and we all like to save some money, right? So any other advantages in your opinion to doing this on a sailboat, or any other disadvantage?
The disadvantage I'll talk about that's the draft, the water draft, the boat draft. That's the problem. I went across the Gulf there and coming in through the intercoastal, I kind of misjudged and I took another inlet that on the charts, everything was fine. When I got there, it was not fine. It was very, very shallow water. There were all buoys out. Should have been fine. I got aground there. I had to get CTOW out. And actually, it was Towboat US to come out. I had to call, kind of in a panic. I called the Coast Guard. And that was an eye-opening experience, I should say, that are you in fear of your life? And that's the question you get. And it's like, if, depending what you answer, if they're coming, it's a salvage operation. It's not, to get them out of there. So I said, well, not at this point, but I says, I'm a little scared. And they said, well, And they helped me out. I had two anchors out trying to stop it from drifting into further shallow water. But we were on a probably about a 50 to 60 degree angle. Mast, and it was just pounding the boat on the sand very hard, and I was worried that it wouldn't hold up, but as it worked out, the boat was fine. We got out of there, we got over to a marina, and there was really no damage to the boat. Well, I shouldn't have, it bent the propeller shaft, I had that, but no damage to the fiberglass or the keel or anything.
And what,
so that's
what
a different damage.
Yeah, what does your boat draw?
4.9, but
4.9.
When floated, you know, you're about 5, really.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, and this year with water so low in a lot of places, it's even an additional challenge. And it's not uncommon for loopers to run aground. But there's been a lot of people running aground, us included, this year on, you know, things that normally would be several feet below the water, or further below the water than they are now. So that's the biggest challenge with the water low. It's interesting because, you know, depending on your perspective, if you need a little bit more room to clear some of the bridges, the water being low is a good thing.
Right.
You know, so if your air draft is your kind of limiting factor, the low water is great. But if you have a deeper keel, low water is not so good. So, you know, I guess it's all just how you look at things.
That was the hardest thing I thought too, because that sand, you know, like it is down there now, all the charts have to be, you know, they're not accurate with all the sand with the hurricane coming through there. And I finally figured out that you can call Towboat US and they will put you in contact with someone local and give you the local info. That was great. Then I knew. But I ran aground again, I think it was two more times because of those inlets. In fact, what happened was we got up to Cape Fear River up in, you know, between North and South Carolina, and we went out. We went out for 87 hours straight up. Ocean City, Maryland.
Wow, that is a long passage.
Yes, we went around Cape Hatteras and right up there. Because we knew that New Jersey was going to be bad too. We had heard that they didn't really maintain it that well, so we were afraid of that. So Ocean City, Maryland, and then we were up to Atlantic City after that. So we were pretty much clear.
Yeah. So I want to take a break and play a message from one of our sponsors. We've talked a lot about the sailboat aspect, which is makes you somewhat unique among loopers. But I want to talk some also about the solo aspect and how much you actually had crew aboard and how much you were solo, because that also makes you a little bit unique among loopers. So we'll go ahead and take that break. We'll be back in a moment.
Okay.
Artisan's Mattress features custom Tempur-Pedic beds in every imaginable shape. We are the only authorized customizing firm for the Tempur-Pedic company. This honor has been earned by Artisan's custom mattresses every day since 1999. Artisan's expertise retains all original Tempur-Pedic manufacturing standards, materials, features, and therefore the 10-year limited warranty. We customize Tempur-Pedic beds for every imaginable use, including yachts, boats, custom homes, motorhomes, RVs, planes, trains, and trucks. Go to our website, artisansmattress.com, for a free estimate, or call now, 800-482-6956. Customer satisfaction is Artisan's foundation. We're back on Great Loop Radio. Today, we're continuing our series on We're back on Great Loop Radio. Today, we're continuing our series on the story of our loop. And in this case, it is the story of my loop. And that person is Jake Kranzik. But Jake, you have looped solo, but you did have crew aboard some of the times. And I noticed when you've been telling some of the stories, you have said we. So tell us a little bit about that. Who did you bring aboard, and how often were you solo versus having crew accompany you?
It ended up I was totally solo from about around Tupelo, Mississippi, to Turner's. And then I was solo from Turner's to Pensacola. From Pensacola to Tarpon Springs, someone was with me. And then after they left, and then from Tarpon Springs down to Cape Coral, I was by myself. That's where I spent the winter, was at Cape Coral, which was ground zero for the latest hurricane. And that was great. It was a municipal marina. Was very reasonable. They had nice facilities. They were located in a residential area, so it wasn't downtown or anything like that. But it's I've seen some of the videos from there. It's a shame what's happened.
It is definitely devastating for that area and for, I think I've said it before on our podcast, but you know, there are have certainly been other storms of that magnitude, but this one seems to have had the biggest impact on the looping community. You know, more looper boats lost there, and not so much current loopers, but gold loopers who fell in love with Fort Myers and chose to make that their home, whether aboard or on land. So many had homes and boats damaged or completely lost by that storm. So it's been a big one for the looper community, and caused a lot of people to change their winter plans this year. So it is devastating, really, for all of them. And since you spent a winter there, I spent last winter there, and you spent the winter of your loop there. And yeah, it's hard to imagine it not being the way we've seen it.
Yes.
Yeah. So we are continuing, for those who are wondering, and we've gotten a lot of questions about this. We were scheduled to have our winter rendezvous in Fort Myers. We have kind of adjusted the event to not be a rendezvous. There's just no place to dock boats. The dockage has been destroyed. So we really can't have a rendezvous because it will be hard for current loopers to be there with no place to put their boats. And we can't have our looper crawls if there are no boats docked in marinas nearby. So we're having our Looper Palooza event, which we had done before the pandemic. And it kind of combines a Great Loop Lifestyle seminar, which is our introductory seminar, about a day and a half. And it combines that with a route briefing, which is a day and a half. And those are not held simultaneously. So you can actually register for both tracks. And there's also a Gold Looper reunion thrown in there. So maybe, Jake, we will see you, or perhaps some of those who you looped with might be there. But so if you're interested in that, go to the greatloop.org website and you can find out all about that event. But Jake, tell us, you know, you mentioned that you had crew aboard for some pretty long stretches. Who were they? You know, how did you find crew for somebody who's maybe considering solo but wants to have some crew there?
Yeah, I told a lot of friends and relatives before I went. You said, you're more than welcome. And that's, again, why I wanted that split cabins so that they could feel comfortable, you know, coming there. And I ended up that I had a friend. He came for about a week down in Cape Coral. We went around Sanibel, things like that. But then he went back. Had a friend that started with me and then, you know, got off, like I say, around Tupelo, Mississippi. And then my niece and her boyfriend came and spent the whole month of February with me. So that was very good. And we went all around Sanibel and the coast there. Then we went to the Dry Tortugas and went down there for a little over a week. That was great. And then went over to Marathon, and then they went back. I had met two fellas up in like Demopolis. I think it was a little further north than Demopolis. And I ran across, and they had the Illinois registration on their sailboat. So I kind of, you know, befriended them and started to talk to them. And here is the one fella from where I'm at right now with my daughter. He's 10 minutes away. And I have no idea, never met him. And the other fellow was in California, and they had been grade school friends in Indianapolis, and they had done a trip coming down the Wisconsin River in Wisconsin in kayaks, and they thought they wanted to try something different. So they said, we're going to get a sailboat, and they got a little sailboat, and they were just headed down to Florida. They weren't really talking about doing the whole loop, but I befriended, and we talked, and I tried to find someone to go with me all the way back to Chicago, and I had a hard time. That's a while, you know, to be on the boat. It's half the loop for sure. And I couldn't find anybody. So I called these fellows and said, hey, if you want to ride back to Chicago, I says, you can come with me. And it took them about 10 minutes. And they called me back and said, okay, we're coming.
Nice.
So they went all the way back to Chicago with me. It was Max Van Diver. Mm-hmm. And Caleb Wright. Mm-hmm. Caleb's from California and Max is from Pingree Grove right over here.
Yeah. So tell me why you decided that you really wanted to have crew aboard. Some solo loopers rarely take on crew. And some of that sometimes depends on the boat. Your boat's kind of a reasonable size. So what was your kind of compelling reason to want to have somebody else with you?
Well, the hardest thing, at least on the sailboat with me, that I found was anchoring. It wasn't so much dropping the anchor, but it was picking it up. When as soon as you pick that anchor up, that boat's going to move. And if no one's at the helm, I had autopilot, but I mean, that's, you know, it's in neutral. I don't have it in gear, you know,
Right.
trying to go anywhere. And that was an issue. And when it's windy, that's a real issue. And then you're trapped there. As you know, everything on the loop is dependent upon the weather. And that really got me. And I thought, you know, I'd really like to have somebody, and my wife wanted somebody on board too with me.
Those are very
So,
good reasons. So,
yeah.
we talked about your boat being a very economical choice. Tell us a little bit more, because we tell people that a lot of the loop's costs are controllable based on the choices you make, right? The boat itself, which you
Right.
made a very economical choice, but then also on some of your other cruising preferences, like anchoring versus marinas, how many miles per day you're cruising. What were kind
Right.
of your general preferences on things like that?
Well, it depends on the location where you were. You know, when I was at Cape Coral, that was 2 months in a marina, you know what I mean, for the winter. But when I was traveling, you know, we went straight down to the Dry Tortugas, you know, that was an overnight sail. And then we were there. There's no marinas there. There's no docks there. You just have to anchor out. And we were fine with that. And we, you know, coming back, you know, over towards the Key West and everything, it took us 2 days to get to Key West. We only went 5 miles an hour. That was it on the whole trip. At the average, I think, was like 4.7. And so you're talking 30 miles a day for a 6 hour day, you know, 40 miles a day for an 8 hour day. That's a long day. You know, so you're not going to travel every day. And I was fine with anchoring. You know, I enjoyed it. I had a small generator, a little Honda generator. So we could, if the batteries went low or anything, I could charge those up. If the motor battery was low or something to start, I could charge that up. And we had, you know, a microwave and other things on board. So that made it really convenient to have that. And that's about all we really needed.
Was the and I should have asked you this earlier when we were talking about kind of the boat's specifications, so to speak, but was the speed ever an issue? Most of the time you're heading with the current coming in the inland
Right.
rivers, with the exception of, the Ohio might have been a challenge. But also in some of the highly tidal areas on the East Coast where the current can be against you, how challenging
Yeah,
was it when the boat was, yeah.
Carlson has a really. I remember there, my nephew went. I took him out and a couple of his kids. We went for a ride down the river there, and we came back. And I had told the marina. I said, you know, I said, I'll call you when I get back. Yeah, call. We'll come out. Well, when we came back, that tide was going out. And I couldn't believe, you know, if they weren't there and to throw, and I had to throw them the lines, I don't know if I would have got in there, you know, trying to get in that slip, because they had two young guys had all they could do to pull that thing in there, you know. So it is, you know, the other place I saw it was up, I think it was in the Trent Severn up there, you know, some of those locks are along the side and they've got a dam off to one side. And the water gets really ripping through there. You know, once you get in that channel to get in toward the lock, you're okay. But you got to watch the times there because, you know, they close at 5 or 4, and that's it. I mean, you know, they're gone to help you. So in those instances, but I never didn't have enough power to do it.
Good
I
to
think
know.
it was 25, 26 horsepower was all that little diesel had, but it had enough power.
Well, and there have been loopers, many, and locals in Charleston who, with much more horsepower, that had the same struggles as you trying to pull into a marina. Our currents are not real friendly for docking.
No.
So yeah, you're not alone in that. So tell us, this was quite an adventure for you. Tell us,
Yes.
reflecting now a few years back, what did you gain from doing this? What does this mean to your life story that you had this adventure?
Well, it was an adventure that I really liked. I talked to it a lot to different people. They've never heard of it. I made a video, and I think I gave you a copy of it that I
You
had.
did,
And
yes.
I gave a lot of people copies of that, and I still do whenever they bring, you know, oh, what is that? And then I say, well, here, you can have this, and this is the whole trip to understand it. So it really is, I felt I accomplished something by doing it. There was no way by the time I was headed up to New York that was not going to complete this. You know, it was going to happen no matter what. You know, as far as time goes, but it worked out for us, and we made it through.
What were some of the highlights of the trip?
The highlights of the trip, I would say, was The rivers were interesting. Every bit had it's very unique. The rivers I enjoyed because I lived in the rivers, and the rivers were easy to navigate in a sailboat because they're all 9 feet, 10 feet deep because they keep the channel that deep, you know. So that wasn't a problem. The dry tortugas, that was really nice when they're going out, you know, for that 87 hours. That was really something to do. So see, we had flying fish come on board, everything else at night. And anchoring behind the Statue of Liberty. Wasn't sure if we could do that, but we did. And there was another boat in there, and then a couple other of us. That was really nice. And should have stayed there a couple of nights until I look at the video, and then I see how rough it was. That's why we left, you know. The Trent Severn and the Erie Canal were just great, both of them. You know, and we did it on the year that we didn't have to pay. Because it was
one of those anniversary celebrations. Yes, I remember those well.
You know,
and the fact that you got over to the dry tortugas is huge, too, because the weather is not generally cooperative in the winter. You know, the time of year that most loopers are in Southwest Florida and the Keys, it's not usually real conducive for a crossing to the dry tortugas. And since you got to do it, you know, it's pretty remote there and you really need to be.
Yes, it's very remote, but it's well worth the effort.
Absolutely. We got to do that, not during our loop. We actually made a separate trip in June because that's usually the more wet, the friendlier weather for that crossing. And we have a podcast on that. If anybody's interested in the dry tortugas, just search on that. But really amazing trip, and I highly recommend it. But I also don't want anybody to risk a bad weather window, you know, in December, January, February, when most loopers are in that area. Usually the weather's not ideal, and you are remote. We were there in a sailboat ran aground on the reef and could not get off, and it was the next day before Towboat US could reach them. It's a different kind of cruising than the loop. You are much more on your own. There is no cell service. There is no facilities of any kind, really. So, but I'm so glad you got to do that because it is such an adventure. And obviously you had a nice long weather window to get there and spend some time and get back.
The weather window going there was great. The weather window leaving there was great. But we had 60 knot winds. We were there one night. And that put us at the anchor. I spun me around. I shouldn't say the anchor dragged, but when it spun me around 180 degrees, I was aground down there. Yeah. And that was, there was a boat there from Cuba, some fishermen. They came out and tried to pull me out. They broke the line. Another sailboat came over in a dinghy to help me. Didn't, but the rangers will not come.
Right.
They will not leave. You're on your own. And we got off the next day. It wasn't that serious, but it was a, you know, there were some very experienced sailors, and they said, oh, that was 60 knots. At least it was rough. But again, we lived through it. We went on, and it made an adventure.
Yeah. You know, in talking to you, Jake, I get the feeling that you have lots of stories with really adventuresome parts of your overall adventure. I think we could dig deeper on that for a long time, but we are starting to run out of time. So as we wrap up, I would love to hear, because you kind of mentioned early on that you really had never had a boat before. So this was new to you. What advice would you give to other people who are new to this idea and perhaps new to boating too, about the best way to go about getting ready for this trip?
Well, do research. I learned to sail on YouTube. That's the way and it seemed to work. And I sailed partially in, you know, for about half a summer up in Chicago on Lake Michigan. It's just, I think the skipper Bob was saying, you know, do it. If you wait for everything to be perfect, oh, I want this perfect boat. I want to have this money, this amount of money to do the trip. I want to have this. It's never going to happen.
Yeah.
You just have to go.
Yeah.
And make the best of it. Don't want to get yourself in trouble. Do some research on this. You know, make sure you're safe. But if you're waiting for all the conveniences and everything, you can do it with a lot less, I found out, than what you really think you need. I did a lot less, and I was comfortable.
Yeah. So. That is great advice. We will leave it there for today. Jake Krancic, thank you so much for joining us. This has been really delightful to hear your stories, and you're leaving me wanting to know more. So hopefully our paths will cross again someday soon, and we can sit down and have a couple of docktails, and I can hear more of your journeys.
The next time you're in Chicago.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jake. And thank you to everyone who has watched or listened today. We'll be back next week with another episode of Great Loop Radio. Until then, safe cruising.